Okay. So, sorry, here we are. We're going to be doing the end of Perek Aleph, the end of the first chapter of Tanya. So last week we talked about, gave an introduction to the whole idea of Tanya, how Tanya was written and so on, and what it's there for, the two parts of Tanya, first part, second part. And then we introduced the first perek where the Alter Rebbe discusses and tries to create a definition of the word Beinoni, essentially. That's the goal. In doing that, he obviously discusses the definition of Tzaddik and Rasha. So the main point was that the definition that we normally use is more of a legal definition. It's what he calls a Shem HaMushal. It's a borrowed term where if a person has more mitzvahs, he's a Tzaddik, more Averis, he's a Rasha, and Beinoni is kind of in the middle. But he proved through various different sources that's not cannot be the ultimate definition or the inner definition, the true definition. And therefore he says it must be that a Benyan is something much higher than that, but attainable. And that's the point of the whole book, that a Benyan is someone who really doesn't actually sin, just like a tzaddik, but he has the struggle, which is something which will come out much more later, obviously in much, much greater detail. And that's why it's called the Sefer Shel Benyanim. It's the book of the Benyan. Which is the aspiration of every person to try and be a Benyani. Now, this introduction, before we go into what we're doing today, this introduction is very consistent with the whole concept of Chassidus in general. In other words, Chassidus is what we call Pnimius HaTorah, the inner essence of Torah, which means to look beneath the surface, right? So when you look at Tzaddik and Rasha and Benyani from a legal perspective, it's more about what they do. It's more about behavior. And person's mostly good, so it's a tzaddik. Well, mostly bad is a rasha and so on. But what you're going to do in Tanya, obviously, is look at the inner workings of a tzaddik and beinoni, otherwise the deeper level of a tzaddik and beinoni, right? Which, I'm saying that because when the Alter Rebbe is going to explain what a beinoni is, it's not just about explaining that a Benyani is someone who struggles but doesn't do averis, right? That's because that's again a behavior definition, right? A good part of Tanya is going to be discussing what the Benyani does to not just to do the right thing, but to actually create a chayas, an energy, a warmth, a inspiration in what he does or she does, right? Which goes to the whole introduction of Tanya, that we have to understand why it's accessible. Remember we said last week, it's based on the pasuk Ki korev elecha hadover moed, that the Torah is accessible b'ficho b'lvavcha la'asos, in your mouth and your heart and behavior. So not just to explain why it's accessible, what we say and what we do, but also b'lvavcha, the heart. Right? Now, the heart that he's going to explain is not the tzaddik's heart. The tzaddik's heart is something different. The tzaddik's heart is only in one direction. The Beinoni's heart struggles because we've got the two souls, as we'll talk about a little bit later, right? But the Beinoni also, the reason the Beinoni is able to reach being a Beinoni is because the Beinoni changes his heart also. And that's why there's a long, it'll become a lot clearer later, but that's why there's a long arichos, a long, lengthy discussion in Tanya about his bondness, about reflection and thinking about the greatness of Hashem and developing some level of love of Hashem, fear of Hashem. And that's why a great part of Tanya is talking about Ava Vayira, the two mitzvahs, loving Hashem and fearing Hashem, which is the mitzvahs in our heart. Because only when you have Ava Hashem and Yiras Hashem are the mitzvahs actually alive mitzvahs, right? And of course, he's going to address it on many levels, because later on in Tanya he's going to talk about how about the person who can't think deeply or thinks deeply but can't connect to the thought enough, which will bring him to sort of a level of real Avas Hashem, right? Because by the way, when we talk about love of Hashem, it's not just, love Hashem, because it's very easy to talk ourselves into that we love Hashem. And we all love Hashem. I'm sure everyone around this room will say love Hashem, right? But we also love the pizza too, you know what I'm saying? That's not real love of Hashem, because you love two things like that. It's not exactly, you know what I'm saying? We love lots of things, right? In our mind, of course, Hashem's important and all that, right? You know, there's a story about there was a great chassid. His name was Reb David Horodoka. He was a chassid of the Rebbe Rashab. Just to give you a little bit of a context of who he was, the Rebbe Rashab, when he made the Tom Chetzvimid Yeshiva with the Bachrim, he put an amazing emphasis on davening. and davening as a mechanism to daven long and to really develop love of Hashem through davening, right? And there was a time where in the Tom Chetvimim there was there were 300 bachrim, and they were all daven, they're all focused on the davening and so on, but there was 30 of them who were excellent daveners, and they would daven way beyond the minyan. There was a second room on the side, and after the minyan they would keep davening, they would develop it. And one time the Rebbe Rashab walked into that room when everyone was davening. Of course, the Rebbe Rashab walked in and everyone stopped davening and they turned to attention. The Rebbe walked, except for two people. I forgot the second one was, but the one was Rebbe David Horodoke. He was totally oblivious to even the Rebbe Rashab walking in, right? And Rebbe Rashab said that for those two Bachrim who were oblivious to him walking in, it was worth making the whole Tom Chetzvim. He said the rest is all profit. He said he covered the expenses just with these two Bachrim, right? Why am I saying that? So at the end of his life, Rebbe David Horodoke, who really did reach very high levels of Avos Hashem, at the end of his life, on his deathbed, someone said to him, "Nu Reb David, the greift Avas Hashem. Reb David, did you reach Avas Hashem?" So he couldn't really deny it, but you don't want to admit it either. I mean, Chassidim never like to talk themselves into it that they reached anything that maybe they hadn't reached. So he said, in Yiddish, he said, "Nu akitzel giton." He said, a little bit of a tickle, maybe, like something. But in other words, Avas Hashem is a big thing, right? So later on, the Tanya will address it. If the whole thing of Abayini is using Avas Hashem, and not only changing our behavior, but changing our whole feeling and working on our feeling, then maybe not everyone's really can do that, right? So later on, there's a whole, which is sort of been the last few days in Chitas, it's the whole idea of what he calls the Avo Mesoteris, the hidden love that we all have, and it's about accessing that and so on and so forth. Okay. So therefore, because that is true, so therefore what the Alter Rebbe needs to do now is not just to explain what a Benyan is, he's got to start all the way from the beginning. And he's going to explain what the person is, what the Yid is. And what's happening, not just what the Yid is outside, but what's happening inside our inner workings of being Yid, which leads us into the concept of the two neshamas, the two souls of the animal soul and the godly soul. That's what he leads into. Okay. So if you, just to be sure you know where we are, it's the last page of this handout, on this page, right, the two dots, Ach Biur Inyan. Does anyone have it? Towards the end of the second chapter. Ach Biur Inyan. Let's make sure. Yeah. Yep. You see it there? Al Pi Masha Kosov. Harav Chaim Vital, yeah? Everyone has it? Okay. It says the following. Ach Biur Inyan. But the explanation of this whole concept is as follows. Al Pi Masha Kosa. By the way, he's going to get back to Benyani in a bunch of chapters from now, in 12 chapters. Right? Habir Inyan, the explanation of this Inyan is as follows. Al Pi Masha Kosa Reb Chaim Vital. According to what Reb Chaim Vital wrote, Zal. Reb Chaim Vital, of course, was the main Talmud of the Arizal. Most of what we have from the teachings of the Arizal comes from Reb Chaim Vital. Right? It's called the Kisvei. Because the Arizal actually didn't write anything down, it's all from Reb Chaim Vital. So Reb Chaim Vital wrote B'Shar HaKadusha. He wrote it in a book called Shar HaKadusha U'Be'etz HaChaim Sha'nun Perek Beis. And he said the following. The L'chol Ish Yisrael. That every Jewish person, Echad Tzadik, whether the person is a Tzadik, Echad Rasha, whether the person is a Rasha, Yeshtei Neshamas, they have two souls. Based on a pasuk in Yeshayahu HaNovi, to get Echsiv, it is written, U'Neshamos Ani Osisi. Hashem said, I made souls. Now the simple explanation of that pasuk is that it's just Hashem said he made many souls because there's many people, so he gave them many souls, right? But the Arizal explained it that no, Hashem's actually referring to the person, each individual uneshamois aniosisya made souls in the plural, meaning made two souls. One thing I just want to give an introduction before we continue that in Tanya. In this chapter already, especially at the end of this chapter, there is very, very much emphasized the fundamental difference between a Jew and not a Jew. And sometimes in today's modern culture, we're uncomfortable with that, but that's just part of Torah, right? That doesn't mean a non-Jew is bad, chas v'shalom. A non-Jew is created with the tzelem elokim, as Pirkei Avos says, created in the image of God. But the roles of a Jew and a non-Jew are completely different. Essentially, if you want to put it in a nutshell, the role of a non-Jew is to maintain the world, the role of a Jew is to bring what's transcendent of the world into the world, right? You can put it that way, if you know what I'm saying. Okay. Which is very different. And that's why the connection to from a Yid to Hashem is different. The Amunah, the faith of a Yid is different. And that's why it talks later in the next chapter about the Nefesh of a Kis, the godly soul, which is a uniquely Jewish soul. And it creates a certain connection between, if you want to put it a little bit differently, just to explain it. So we know in the very, very beginning of Bereshis, of Chumash, it says, Bereshis Bara Elohim. Hashem, Elohim created the universe, right? We know Elohim and Hashem are two names of Hashem. The name of the Yudke Vavke is a name of transcendence. It's the name of Hashem's infinity. The name of Hashem being completely higher and not bound by the finiteness of the world at all. Elohim is the name of Tzimtzum, where Hashem chooses to express himself and manifest himself in a more limited way, right? The world is Elohim. The world is an outcome of Elohim. The expression of Hashem is Elohim. When you say the world is, that includes a non-Jew. Every creation of the world, right? Whereas a Yid who has an Hashem, Nefesh Elokis, is connected to Shem Havai, Shem Yudke Vavke, the name of Yudke Vavke. It's very different. Okay. That's what he starts with. So he says that all Yidden have two souls. Nefesh Achas, sorry, Shehen Shtein Nefoshes, which are two, he calls them Nefoshes. Because the word Nefesh is actually like the lowest level of the Neshama. So, some places it says that on the level of Neshama there's also different, but certainly at the level of Nefesh there are two souls. Okay. And we'll see, one soul is the soul belonging to Klippa, which is like the non-holy part of the world, and one soul belonging to Kedusha. Now, what's the idea of starting off by saying there's two souls? And this is a very important thing I want to make, a very important point, which is fundamental to what Tanya is about, or what Chassidus is about in general. We already have a principle before Tanya came along, before Chassidus came along. We have this principle in Gemara on a very simple level called the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. The good inclination, the bad inclination. Right? We all have that. Every child knows that. We have the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. We have two inclinations. What does the inclination mean? Inclination means two drives. Two wills. In other words, an inclination means like what we are drawn to. So we have two drives within ourselves. One draws us to things that are bad, Yetzer Hara, right? And one draws us to things that are good, mitzvahs, right? Okay. So what's the chiddush of two souls? You follow the question? Why don't we just stick with the model of Yetzer Tov, Yetzer Hara? It's simpler.
Are they the same thing?
Well, that's the question. Are they the same thing? They sound like the same thing in a way. The animal soul is an animal that comes from Klippa. Klippa means non-holy. And the godly soul is godliness, right? But they're not the same thing. No, they are the same thing in that the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, is an outgrowth of the animal soul. Yes, the animal soul can result in a Yetzer Hara. One of the manifestations of the animal soul could be the Yetzer Hara. And manifestation of the Nefesh Elokis, the godly soul, is the Yetzer Tov, right? But why are they fundamentally different? Because what Tanya is focusing on is the following. Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara is what we do, what we are drawn to do. It doesn't say anything about who we are, right? What the Alter Rebbe is much more focused on here is not who, what we do. What we do is very important. That's the whole point of Tanya. Of course, we've got to serve Hashem, right? But it has to, that's again, Pnimiyus Satur, the inner part of Torah. That's much deeper than that. It's got to start from, what's your reality? What's your single focus in life? What's your identity? Right? I mean, consciously. Obviously, we all know that deep, deep down, the identity of every Yid is a Nefesh HaKis. But that's much later on in Tanya. But I'm talking on a conscious level. Right? And I was a person, just to give you an example, a person can do everything right. A person keep the rules. But who are they? Understand? And that's the so we talk about neshama. Neshama is not just what we are drawn to. Neshama means what's our chayas, what's our life, and therefore what's our focus, what's our reality, what are we centered around, right? And people talk about living a God-centered life, right? Living a God-centered life doesn't mean that you do mitzvahs. No, that's not being a God-centered life. God-centered mind is that everything about you is about God. And that's actually the struggle between the Nefesh HaBamas and Nefesh HaLakis. It's not at the initial stages in the foundation level, it's not a struggle if you're going to do good things or bad things. It's about who you are. That's what the struggle is. Long before mitzvahs. It's about what's my focus, what I want. Self or God? Materialism or godliness? Right? That's what we're talking about. That's why it talks about this whole idea. He says L'chol Ish Yisrael, every single yid has two nefashos, has two souls. A soul means what gives you life. What drives you in the morning? What drives your life? That's what he says. Okay. So this chapter just talks about the animal souls. He says Nefesh Achas, right? You with me? Nefesh Achas, the first Nefesh, Mitzada Klippa V'Sitra Achra. First nefesh comes from klippa and sitra achra. Just to explain those terms. So, in Hasidus, always when we refer to unholy stuff, it's called two things: klippa. You want a pen? Klippa or sitra. It's klippa and sitra achra. Klippa means a peel. Because what is the definition of bad or unholiness? What's the definition of impurity in Hasidus? Anything that doesn't reveal Hashem. Anything that is hiding Hashem is unholy. Holiness, by definition, is a lakus, is godliness. Anything that hides holiness is Hashem, is klippa. Just like a skin, it hides the fruit. Right? And it's important to understand that because, like as we'll see, the nefesh habamis, the animal soul at its essence, is not evil. We sometimes make it evil if we don't take care of it properly, but if we don't tame it. But it is unholy. It's klippa. Why is it unholy? Because at its very outset, it doesn't reveal elokus. It doesn't reveal godliness. It's not godly. Anything that's not godly is already klippa. Now, there's different levels of klippa, as we'll soon see, but it's still klippa. Sitra achra is the same other term, just to understand the term. Sitra achra means, because we call holiness and elokus, godliness, we call it sitra de kedusha, the side of kedusha. Something that's unholy is called the other side, sitra achra. So those are the two terms, klippa and sitra achra, right? Okay. Just to explain a bit more, sometimes klippa is not a bad thing because it's brought down in Chassidus, you know, you have certain, like even in, there's different levels of klippa, right? Like, just, you know, we just had Tu B'Shvat, right? So they talk about this, in Kabbalah they talk about this, the different types of fruit that you eat. Because interesting, right? We have certain types of fruit, some fruit, the klippa needs, so a skin is always, when you see the skin, you don't see the fruit. So a skin is always hiding the fruit, right? But it's interesting that some fruit, for example, you can eat the skin. Peach, you can eat the skin. Apple, you can eat the skin. It's still different than the fruit, but you can eat it, right? An orange, you can't eat the skin. It's not edible, you throw it away. Or you make chocolate out of it, that's a new minute. But normally, right, okay. Or a very hard fruit, a pomegranate, you can't eat the skin altogether, right? So in other words, there are different levels of klippa. There are klippas that can be channeled into kedusha, can be transformed. They can actually help you. They can benefit if you use them the right way. Because there's a concept that Chassidus brings also that Hashem created the world with klippa. Now we know that Hashem, when Hashem created the world, we say the world was a world, meaning it was a limited, finite world. But there was a much greater godly consciousness before the sin of the tree, right? And yet there was still klippa, because by definition, the world is a place that doesn't reveal godliness at its highest level. So we say there, the klippa had a different function. Because klippa hides the fruit, but klippa does something else. Klippa is shomer hapri. It protects the fruit also. Right? In other words, it allows it to exist. Like we, in Alter Rebbe says much later in Tanya, in Shari Yichud Vemuna, that without Tzimtzum, Hashem can't create a world that's finite. He can't create a physical world. So sometimes Tzimtzum just serves a good purpose. The fact that we can exist is because Hashem isn't fully revealed. If he were fully revealed, he wouldn't exist. So there is that concept of klippa also. But generally speaking, when we say klippa, we mean unholy because it's hiding elokus. It's not godly. The other parts of the positive part of klippa is what we, with some klippa, we can achieve, but when, not what it is now. Right? What it is now, particularly after the aver of Chet Etzadas, which is most of the world, I mean, world since the sixth day of creation, is klippa means unholy. It's unholy.
But not evil necessarily.
Not necessarily. How you break through it? There's different types of klippas, and I'll tell you later. Sometimes it can be transformed, but aspects of it need to be not transformed. aspects of it need to be discarded and sometimes broken in order to get the good parts out of it. Okay, so he says like this again. So nefesh achas, the one soul we have. By the way, the reason it's called achas, as the Mefarshim of Tanya explains, or the Rebbe Rashab actually explains this, it's not only called nefesh achas because like a number, the number one soul. It's also nefesh achas because it's the first soul. The nefesh elokis, the godly soul, doesn't come into a person. It comes into a person properly in stages. Birth is stage one, partially connects with the person. Naming is the second part, and bar and bas mitzvah is the full integration of the godly soul. Right? That's what I say. A person only really has a proper neshama, and then yetzer tov is also only because the yetzer tov comes from the godly soul. It's only fully developed at bar and bas mitzvah. The color story of Yonis and Eibeshitz. Yonis and Eibeshitz was a very, very clever. He was a genius, and he also as a kid was a bit mischievous, but he was also very clever. He's come up with these amazing clever things based on learning. So once asked Yonis and Eibeshitz as a kid, he says, How come you're so good? Like, you keep all the mitzvahs, you're able to learn so well. Why? How come you? Doesn't a person have the estob yet? Sorry. He says, very simple. There's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch, when a judge judges a case, when there's two parties, two litigants, he's not allowed to hear one side of the story until the other one comes. He says, because we know that the Yetzer Tov only comes at bar mitzvahs, I can't listen to the Yetzer Hara now because the Yetzer Tov hasn't come yet. So I need to hear both sides of the story. So if I'm not listening to the Yetzer Hara, it was a clever thing to say. Okay. But that's why the Nefesh HaBamis is called Nefesh Achas. It's the first soul. It comes into the person first. Okay. And that's why the Alter Rebbe talks about it first, right? And it's from Klippa and Sitra Achra, right? V'hiya misla, what's its function? V'hiya misla beshes bedam ha'odom. It comes into the blood of a person. That's where it lives. It works through the blood of a person. L'hachoye isaguv, to give life to the body. U'kidichsiv, like it's written, ki nefesh habasar bedamhi. The pasuk in Shchumish says the nefesh of a person is in the blood, right? It's basically the life force of a person. Okay, later we'll learn that the main headquarters of the nefesh habam is in the heart, the part of the heart that's my biology is not very good, but the part of the heart that's full of blood. What's that? The right, the left? That's the left, right? Something like that. Yeah. That's where the headquarters is, but it goes through the blood because that's what gives life to the person. In other words, the nefesh habamis at its very core is the neshama that gives physical life and motivates the person to physically survive from the very, very first moment, right? Which, by the way, is also important to understand. So why is it klippa then? Why is it klippa and sitra achra? Why is it a problem to exist? Like, right? So the chassidim used to explain like this. That the Alter Rebbe, again, just emphasizes this point we said before very, very strongly from the beginning of Tanya. Yes, existence is klippa. Why is existence klippa? Because the very fact, in other words, from the first day of being born, Nefesh HaBamis hasn't done anything wrong. But it's still klippa and sitra achra. Why is klippa and sitra achra? Because it gives life to an existence that doesn't automatically and obviously reveal Hashem. So it's a helem v'hester, it's a concealment on God, and therefore it's klippa, right? Why is that important? It's important to know the nature of something to be able to deal with it, right? You know what I'm saying? So that's why that's so important, and that's why our job is to bring mastery from the neshama of the nefesh habamis, and to work the nefesh habamis, and to understand its nature, that it is fundamentally klippa. It's got some good parts to it, but it is fundamentally klippa. Because it gives existence to something that doesn't reveal God, that actually conceals God, conceals Hashem, and therefore it's klippa. Okay. There and therefore, because it's klippa. Yeah.
When a baby's born, like you can see, like the miracle in it.
You can see.
At that beginning, right at that point.
You can see the miracle in birth.
You see the miracle of this life that's grown in a mother's womb and then comes out, and it's like, it is, you know, you kind of have this moment of like, wow. Like it's not nature.
Correct. The experience, of course, the experience of birth obviously is an obviously godly thing. But the miracle is that Hashem created something. But what did He create? A klippa. He created Nefesh HaBamis. By the way, and also, that's number one. Number two, Nefesh HaBamis is not the body necessarily. The guf is the home of both souls, right? And therefore, there's aspects in the body already that have shel kis, don't forget, when the person is born. Not fully integrated yet at Bar Bas Mitzvah, but it's already there, right? So what you're seeing is not just the Nefesh HaBamis, but we're focusing on just the Nefesh HaBamis. Nefesh HaBamis' function is klipa, because it's just to create a physical existence without necessarily revealing the godly creative power behind it.
So seeing it is almost like revealing that. Like seeing the Kedusha.
Seeing and noticing it, right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, one of the things we do as Yidden is everything we see, we try, even in the world generally, right? The world's a place of klipa, but nevertheless, we try to reveal the godliness in it, right? Especially with klipas noigas, we'll soon see, right? Now he says an interesting thing, and therefore, umimeno bo'ois kol amidois rois, and therefore because Nefesh HaBamis at its very root is klipa, even though it hasn't done anything wrong yet, but it's klipa, therefore it becomes also the source for bad character traits, because that's what klipa does. If you don't work with it, it naturally gives way to bad midas. Now, he says, where do those bad middos come from? Me'arba yesoidos roim shabo, from the four bad foundations. So just to explain briefly, we know that the physical world is made up of four foundations, according to Torah, Eish, Maim, Ruach, Ofer. Fire, water, wind, and dust, earth, right? That's the four yesoidos, the four foundations of creation. However, it's not just the four physical foundations, there's also four ruchnistic foundations, or four, all of existence. All of existence is based on those four foundations. In fact, what Chassidus teaches us is it works the other way around. We can understand Ruchnius by looking at Gashmius, but actually what happens is really the other way around. In other words, the reason that there's four physical foundations is because there's four spiritual foundations. And the four, whatever happens in the physical world evolves from the spiritual reality. We just work backwards. Like the Pasuk says, Umipsori echze loka. From my flesh, I can see God. Why can I see God from my flesh? Or godliness, right? Because that's my starting point. I'm the body. So that's why I look at my body. I know that my body evolves from Selam Elokim, from a godly energy and a godly structure. And therefore, if I want to understand godliness and godly structures, I look at my body, how it works. So I know that just like I have a head that has seichel and I have midas and so on. Therefore, you know, you work back to the 10 spheres and the 10 powers and so on and so forth. But that's because that's the only way I can look. But really, it's the other way around. In other words, really, Hashem first of all brought out the godly 10 spheres, for example, or godliness, or the godly structures. And from there, evolves the physical ones, right? So what I'm trying to say is that when he says over here that the four midas come from the four foundations, which are more spiritual foundations of the Nefesh HaBamis, it's not like we see the four foundations and then we learn lessons from them. No, it works all the way around. In other words, those are the real four foundations, the ruchnistic ones, right? Especially the holy ones. So therefore, that's what he says. Okay. So he says, therefore, just like the world is four foundations, so too everything spiritual is made up of the four foundations, including Nefesh HaBam, it's the animal soul. So the animal soul has fire, has water, has dust, has wind, and has dust. And therefore, those four foundations give room for four different types of bad character traits. Weak character traits, right? And he explains and he gives examples. Now, it doesn't mean that everyone has all these bad midas, but it does explain where our weaknesses, personality weaknesses, come from, right? Because everyone will have a more dominant foundation or more dominant powers, and therefore some will suffer from this, some will suffer from that, but nevertheless, that's where they come from. And he explains, says like this, the Hainu, Kaas, Vegaiva, anger and arrogance, comes misoid ha'esh, comes to the foundation of fire. Why? First of all, as explains, Rashi explains that why is anger come from fire? Because anger is passion, anger is warmth, in a negative way, right? So that's what comes from fire. And arrogance comes from the foundation of fire, just like fire has the trait of going upwards, so too, the arrogant person is always trying to be superior. So that's the idea of gaiva, of kas, and gaiva coming from fire, right? Because it goes up. Okay. Then he says, now that's one ego basically, right? Which is also basically generally the description of the Nefesh HaBamis, right? See, part of this is the whole thing also, just part of the you know, when it comes to gaiva, when it comes to arrogance. So we know that's not just stam a bad character trait, it's actually the source of bad character traits, right? We've explained this before. So later on in Tanya, we'll learn that a person has seven middos, right? And the seven middos, as it says, are correspond to the seven nations that lived in Eretz Yisrael before Eretz Canaan, right? Before we went there, Canaani, Chitti, Amori, and so on. Now, by them, although there was a war and so on, but by them, there have to be. There's no mitzvah to completely destroy them. Why? Because there's a redeeming fact. There is a redeeming part of every bad middah. Most bad middahs that we have, like we're going to talk about the next one, for example, most bad middahs that we have are not intrinsically bad. They are bad the way I feel them now, but they're not intrinsically bad. Meaning there's an emotion there which can be channeled into something good, right? Like the next one we're learning, we'll see in a second. But where we do find this exception is, the Rambam explains also, is kas and gaiva, anger, and particularly arrogance. Because arrogance is like amolek, and the pasuk says, reishis goy amolek. Amolek is the first, is the head of all the bad middos. It's the source of the bad middos, right? That's what has to be destroyed, because there's no redeeming factor to arrogance. Why? Because when we say the nefesh habamis, right? When we say the nefesh habamis is klippa and sitra achra, because it's something that hides godliness. That's why, because it hides godliness, it's hiding its source. So what is it? It's a selfish existence. It's interested in self, basically. That's what it's interested in. Right? That's why one of the things we are all born with, and we are all born with because we have a nefesh habamis, is ego, right? Now that ego can, which is a strong sense of self, in a negative way. But that can express itself in different ways. When it expresses itself in pure arrogance, that comes from the yisod of fire, comes from the foundation of fire. Is that clear? You good? Okay. And same thing with anger. Then he says, v'tavas hatanugim, pursuit of pleasure, temptation of pleasure, pursuit of pleasure, I suppose is what he's saying, right? Comes from yisod hamayim. So basically indulgence, tivus, whatever taiva it is. I don't know how you translate taiva. What's a good translation of taiva? Any way you translate it loses its translation of it. Taiva is like when you know.
Desire.
Sorry? Yeah, but it's like a strong
desire.
An indulgent desire, I suppose, is the best translation, right? Indulgent desire. On whatever level, I mean. It's an indulgent desire to do something that's got nothing to do with serving Hashem, basically. That's really what it is, right? It's pleasure for the sake of pleasure. Right. That comes from the foundation of water. Why? Interesting association here, because everything that has pleasure into it, for example, a fruit, the Mefarshim explained, the fruit has this like sweetness to it. So that sweetness comes from like the wetness, the moisture that comes from the water that keeps the tree alive. So water is the water. If you don't water a tree, it won't grow nicely. One of a delicious apple, the more water you give it, the more fresh the apple will be. So the freshness, the pleasure of something is like the moisture that is the freshness of it, which is associated with the water. Okay. Then he says, v'hoilelis v'leitzonis, frivolity, wildness, sort of just like, I don't exactly translate it, but in Yiddish it's called tzlozenkeit. In other words, just like lack of discipline, lack of control, lack of self-control, I guess. And scoffing, right? Which in Yiddishkeit is, all the books of Musa talk about this, it's a terrible thing. Lack of seriousness, basically, right? The hispoirus and self-glorification, udvarim betelim and just stam idle, empty talk, misoy de ruach, that all comes from the foundation of wind, because it's like wind has no tangibility to itself for these things also. Just to point out, the difference between, he talked about arrogance before, so there's gaiva, and then there's hispoirus, self-glorification. What's the difference between the two? So it's very simple. Gaiva is arrogance that comes for a reason. The person has what to be arrogant about. Very talented person. They have good intellect, they have good skill, they have good talent. And they know it. Like you say about a person, he or she is a very talented person. If you don't believe me, you can ask them themselves. They'll explain it to you. Right? That's gaiva. Hispoirus is just self-inflation. What's the word? Yeah, where you conflate yourself, in other words, you overrate yourself for nothing. In other words, there's people that walk around as if they're nothing to be arrogant about, but just in Yiddish, there's good words for these things. Zublosenkeit, like they ongeblosen. That's the word in Yiddish. Okay, that comes thing. And then two very important and very problematic and complex middos also come from the one of earth, which is atzlus va'atzvus, laziness and melancholy, sadness. Misoid ha'afar come from the foundation of dust, right? Now, of course, many of these things can be broken down into sub categories, and later on we see it's not just four foundations, but these four foundations also manifest themselves in the seven middos, and those seven middos can have, I'm talking about the seven negative middos or the nefesh habamis, right? These are general sort of principles of the way a person is made up. By the way, there's a very, very important concept in Yiddishkeit, and I'm just letting you, because I happen to be into this topic now on a different shir, right, on Thursday morning shir, but I just want to point out how important this is, Al Pi Torah, right? Al Pi Torah, we're all born with good stuff, as we're soon going to see, but we're all born with weaknesses, right? What's the relevance of that? Who cares why? In other words, who cares why we have weaknesses? Maybe I have weaknesses because my parents didn't parent me properly, or maybe because I had a... Or maybe I had a bad experience with something, with a bad experience with the teacher, or what might have come in it. So first of all, that could also be. Sometimes a person can develop negative emotions because of negative experiences. That's true. But it's not always true. And what's important here is that, number one, the nefesh habamis, the animal soul, is klipa. It's something that needs to be worked with. Otherwise, left alone, it results into negative, because it is a place, it is an entity that hides Hashem. It doesn't have godly consciousness. Right, and therefore, by definition, it is self. It's about self, and that selfishness or self-centeredness can develop into terrible things. Right, part of that equation is that every single person is born with a nefesh habamis, an animal soul, just with a different animal. Some have different kinds of animals in the world. So therefore, every person has different struggles. Some have the fire one, some have the water one. Right, because there's a very big, in today's society, in the secular world, there's quite a mindset to blame every problem we have on something. Trauma, experiences, place was not, right? Now, not these things aren't true, they are true sometimes, although they're definitely overused. But maybe it's not. Maybe just I have an anger problem because that's the way I was born. And that's fine. What is it? What's the difference why I have it? The difference is the level of responsibility. Right, the Torah places an incredible, and the whole Tanya is about this, that we have a choice. Right, Moyach Shaltalev, we have a choice to make decisions, to think, and for the brain to rule the heart, and to make choices that are not natural, that are not our natural disposition, not our natural personality, and that's coming to very strong through over here, because we're just born with these things, which we'll learn later. We are born with them, and not bound by them. Right, and that's part of what Tanya is about, really. Right, so which places the responsibility on who? On the way the Eibshter created us. Well, then that's the way the Kirish labeled us. He said we can overcome them and we can work with them. And we can make choices, and that's our job. That's our mission. Now, goes into a very, very important inyan now. Let's have a look at this. It says, the gam midas toivis. Not only does the nefesh habamis result in bad midas, bad character traits, but there's some good character traits that it also results in. So we're talking about a Jew now, right? We'll get to the non-Jew in a second. There are certain inborn good character traits that are part of the nature of every Jew, which the Gemara says is based on the Gemara, which also come from the nefesh habamis, also come from the animal soul. Meaning, you don't have to even wait for the godly soul to have certain good middos. There are certain good middos that come from nefesh habamis. For example, so the Gemara says, the Gemara in Yevamah says, Kamoi rachmonis ugemilus chasodim, compassion and kindness. Ba'ois imena. The Gemara says that all the brand of the Jew, the genes of a Jew, is to be rachmonim by shonim gemilus chasodim. Rachmonim are compassionate people. By shonim are bashful people, meaning refined people, and gemilus chasodim, kind people, do acts of kindness. Right? He over here only for some reason only mentions two of them, but he's giving an example of these two middos, which are natural to the Jew. What does it mean, natural? Natural means they come from the nefesh habamis. Right? Now, two things we have to understand. First of all, who cares where it comes from? Like, why do I need to know this? So, on a book called the Oras al-Tanya, it says, you need to know it because like this, you need to know that there's certain midas, anything that comes from the nefesh lakis, because the nefesh lakis, the godly soul, which we'll learn about later, comes into the body, it's trapped in the body. Therefore, access to our nefesh lakis always comes with a lot of hard work. That's what we do on this earth, right? We Nefesh HaBamis doesn't come hard. That's easy. I mean, right? The Nefesh HaBamis influence on us is very easy. And if you leave it to go, it'll just remain a Nefesh HaBamis, right? With all this negativity. Because that's a natural state. But Nefesh HaBamis, in a case which you always have, that's hard. That's avoided. You got to really access that. You got to really work hard, right? It's things that are Nefesh HaBamis are easy. So what he's telling us, an interesting thing, he's saying, don't only think it's the bad midas that come from Nefesh HaBamis. There's some good midas that come from Nefesh HaBamis also. And those aspects that come from the Nefesh HaBamis are therefore easier to access. In other words, we might not always feel that way. Maybe it's hard to be kind or hard to be compassionate. But if you want to draw on those midas, it's actually a lot easier than other things. It's a lot easier than davening, for example. A lot easier than learning Torah. That's all that's a Nefesh HaKis stuff. Right? But being compassionate to someone else, you need to know that it's actually not that difficult. Why? Because it comes to Nefesh HaBamis. It's natural. That's number one. Now the question is, if Nefesh HaBamis is klipa, so how does it bring good midas? So he says a very interesting thing. He says, "Ki b'Yisrael nefesh zu de klipa, he me klipas noiga." Because by a yid, this nefesh of klipa, it is klipa, but it's klipas noiga. What does klipas noiga mean? Shesh bo gam kein toiv. There's two, later on in Tanya, he explains this in more detail. There's two types of klipa. There's klipas noiga, and there's klipas tmeus legamri, which means there's klipas noiga means, the word noiga means to shine. There's a type of klipa which Hashem created, which has a spark of good, which means, by and large, it's an entity that conceals godliness, but there's a ray of godliness in it that can be noticed also. Maybe that explains a little bit your question about the baby being born also could be. But right? So there's aspects, it's not complete concealment. And therefore, translating into like, it's not completely selfish either, therefore. There's some selflessness there. There's some good stuff there. Right? He says, V'hi misoid eitz hadas toivara. Kabbalistically, it's rooted in this concept of Hashem, this tree that he created in Gan Eden, which is the Eitz Hadas Toiv V'Ra, it's the tree of knowledge of good and bad. It's a mixture between good and bad, right? So far, we've explained three things about the Nefesh HaBamis, right? First of all, the Nefesh HaBamis is a Nefesh of Klippa. Before we start with any character traits, it's a Nefesh of Klippa because it gives life to a physical existence. That's what Nefesh HaBamis is, before any character develops. It's a Nefesh of Klippa, not bad, it's just a Nefesh of Klippa because it keeps alive, it is there to create or to inspire, to enliven something that is physical and material that hides Elokus. Second of all, it gives birth to, because of what it is in its essence, it gives birth to some bad midas, which comes from the four different Yisodis. And thirdly, it is also the source of some good midas, right? Now, I want to expand a bit more, but before we do that, two things. First of all, this understanding of this is so important because it gets down to what the Alter Rebbe is going to talk later in Tanya, what it really means to serve Hashem, right? Because obviously part of what we do in our life is we turn the bad into good, which is a concept talked about later. Much later, right? We do good and also we turn bad into good. Or we discard the real bad, but then some bad we transform to good and so on. We can only really do that if we understand the source of the bad, which is Nefesh HaBamis. In other words, we go down to where it's not so bad, but what it is in its essence, and understand that at that point, at that level, it's a klipa, and therefore we work with it, we work with Nefesh HaBamis at that very fundamental level, which later on, I guess, expressed itself in the idea of bittul, of making the Nefesh HaBamis subservient and surrendering to the Nefesh HaKis, then we can go on to other things. Although we can't really turn bad into good if the source of the klipa is still there, is still untouched or unchanged. You see what I'm saying? In other words, it's like everything else, you can only really cure something if you understand the root cause of it. Otherwise, you're constantly dealing with a symptom. And that's why understanding Nefesh HaBamis is so important. Now, the next part of Perek Beis, which we'll come to, and then I'll put it all together, because it's interesting, because he says that some of these middos come from Nefesh HaLakis, right? The godly soul, like the doing good and being compassionate. So how about doing good? Is there a difference between doing good from Nefesh HaBamis or doing good from Nefesh HaLakis, right? We'll see in a second. So there's some very subtle differences here. But he does bring in something interesting, which needs to be understood. I'm going to say it the way it is, because obviously some people struggle with the next part of Tanya. In fact, there's a very famous story with the Alter Rebbe that when he was in prison, he was taken to interrogation, and he was interrogated on lots of fundamental concepts of Chassidus. And he answered all of them brilliantly, and they were very, very satisfied with the answers. And then they hit him with the most difficult question. And they said in the book of Tanya that you wrote, in the beginning, at the end of Perek Aleph, you write derogatory things about non-Jews. Which that's what it seems to be in the next few lines. And they said, "How? What's the shot?" So the story goes, the Alter Rebbe just smiled and accepted the smile. What was going on? Basically, the Alter Rebbe was saying, "Listen, you really want to know the answer? You really want me to explain this? Like, I explained everything really well, right? You see, I can answer all the questions." And when he smiled, they said, "Okay, you know, leave it. Sorry, we'll let it go." But what was the problem? Because the Alter Rebbe says that the nefesh, even the nefesh habamis of a Jew, is different than the nefesh habamis of a non-Jew. Not only what the Alter Rebbe is going to explain in the next chapter, that only the nefesh al-kis is uniquely Jewish, but even the nefesh habamis is different. Why? Because he says the nefesh habamis of a non-Jew doesn't come from klipas noiga, it comes from complete klipa. Now what does that mean? Because he brings over there the Gemara that the nation. Let's just quickly read it because it's getting late. I'll quickly read it and then just explain it a bit. Masha'en Ken, he says, "Nafshayis umayis ha'olam," different to the souls of the nations of the world. Hein meshar klipas atmeis, they come from the other klipas. Masha'en b'hen toif klal, they do not have good in it. Mishkosah beitzchayim sham emtes perigimol, and therefore he quotes from the Zohar and the Gemara. V'chol tivu de avdin ha'umus lagamay avdin. Therefore, the good that they do is normally for self-interest. The Gemara says that the kindness that is done by non-Jews, it's for their own benefit. Now, what does this mean? First of all, there's a lot written in the literature of the Rabbeim that there's the Alter Rebbe, it doesn't mean all non-Jews, first of all. Because there's a concept which we call Chassidei Umos Ha'olam, the righteous among the Gentiles, as they call them nowadays, right? And there is a concept of a non-Jew having a nefesh habamis, an animal soul, which is klipas noiga, just like a Jew's nefesh habamis, just like a Jew's animal soul, right? Number one. And we know that they were pretty selfless people, like what we call today the Gentiles, the righteous among the Gentiles, the people during the war went out of their way to, with complete selflessness, because it was the right thing to do, and to save Jews. It's not just a Yad Vashem made up term, it's the way it is. It's a real thing, right? They were taka righteous among the Gentiles, and one has to imagine that they came from a place which was completely selfless, which is a good nefesh habamis, which is a good nefesh habamis from klipas noiga. But even that, those nefesh habamis, even those animal souls that aren't, right? Again, you see, because you always have to understand the terminology of chassidus. Just like when we say the word Russia, we said last week that we all must fall into the category of a Russia because we do averus sometimes, right? Does that mean we're bad people? No, you see, the term bad people and the way the Alter sounds in Russia are two different things. Yes, we are engaged with bad when we do an aver, that's true. And therefore we might fall into the category of a Russia. That doesn't mean we're bad people, right? Same thing over here. When we say that the nefesh habamis of a non-Jew is klipper, complete klipper, and not klippas noiga, all it means is that they're normal. The normal reason that a person does good, there are very few people in the world, even by Yidden, by the way. Even when we say that the Jewish nefesh habamis can give rise to real compassion and acts of kindness, he's talking about altruistic acts of kindness, right? Altruistic compassion. It's not actually a normal thing to do that. Why? Because since people are created physically and we're created with an ego, on some subtle level, most people do good at least a nuanced self-interest in it. You follow? And that's the way Hashem created the world. Hashem created the world is that people do things to feel good and to be happy and to live a good life, right? So even in the more sort of spiritual, or more sort of like, even you find in self-help literature, right? They talk about how do you be happy? You got to give life meaning. How do you give life meaning? You got to do kindness. At the end of the day, so why are you doing kindness? Why are you doing kindness? Because you want to live a good life. You want to be happy. You've read a book and you understood that just by pursuing pleasure, you're unhappiness. Right? Now there's a whole scientific explanation I saw on YouTube yesterday about, you know, serotonin and what's the other one, and dopamines, right? All different scientific ways that I understood to explain these things today. So therefore, it's very, very difficult. It's actually, when you see good people and they do a lot of kindness, the fact that they have a little bit of self-interest is actually normal. It's just that they're able to channel their self-interest into good things rather than bad things, okay? But they right? That's the nefesh, that's a normal nefesh abamis of normal people. To do acts of kindness more selflessly, that's a nefesh abamis of a Jew, or chassidei umesoilo, right? In other words, the people, let's take the example of the war, right? The non-Jews who had that also similar, a Jewish type nefesh abamis, right? That's not regular good thing, that's not regular kindness, that's selfless kindness. In other words, there could have been people there that were very good people and helped other people. They just didn't want to give up this, risk their lives to save other people. I mean, okay, we look back. I mean, we judge governments and worlds for not mixing in, but judging people in Poland for not hiding Jews, very hard to judge them. You know, I mean, there could have been, some of them were killed. And Frank's posts were killed, right? Because it was actual real altruism there, right? To help another person, to be compassionate to another person, just because? Not because I worked out that's a good way to live. No, just because it's a good thing to do. It's natural. It's a good thing to do. That's already a madrega. Right? It's already a madrega. And that's the difference between the two nefesh abamises. So it's not actually a negative thing. It's saying that's normal. That's a worldly normal. That's part of being created by Elohim. The nefesh abamis of a Jew, because it has a little bit of good, and we learn that also that's a nefesh abamis of every Jew, and the nefesh abamis of some non-Jews, the ones who were chassidei umes ha'olam, that has an extra dimension to it that allows the person to do kindness and compassion completely selflessly. And then, as the Mefarshim explained, there's even a high level of kindness which can come only from nefesh elokis. That's got nothing to do with you altogether. It's not because being a person is doing good, it comes only from godliness. That's a high madrig. That comes later. So those are the three sort of levels. So what's the point of what we learned today, basically, is that we have two neshamas. We learned today is the understanding of nefesh abamis that comes from klipa, meaning that it conceals, that kills elokus, therefore that's its existence. Therefore it also becomes the source of the bad midas that we have, which comes from the four foundations, and because it comes from klipas noiga, it also comes the source of good things that we have, which is a natural ability to do kindness and have compassion. Next week, we're going to the Nefesh Elokis. God bless you.